welcome to another episode of the William Branham Historical Research Podcast. I'm your host, John Collins, the author and founder of William Branham Historical Research at william-branham.org, and with me I have my co-host and friend, Franny Nance, former member of Charismania. Franny, it's good to have you on and to have you help co-host Charismania, the series that I'm doing on Charismania. Right. There are so many things that I've wanted to talk through, and as you probably know, I've had a few guests who have talked through their charismatic experience, and it isn't so much that I'm against the charismatic experience, but I'm against many of the things that happen within it, and one of the biggest of which we're going to talk about today, is this deliverance ministry. There are so many problems with the way that it is framed and shaped and the impact it has on, interestingly, both the patient and the quote-unquote healer. All of this scenario creates this mess that I want to talk through today. So thank you for coming on to talk through it.
Yeah, well, thanks for letting me come on to talk about it. I have a little outline, so if I'm looking over here, that's what I'm doing. But yeah, I just have a little opener. Because I was sort of thinking through, because you had mentioned this before, and I've heard a lot of your guests discuss their experience with deliverance, and recently listened to another podcast. It's called Heaven Bent, and she was talking about her trauma, I guess, related to deliverance ministry and just the fear. So I don't know, it just got me thinking. But I have my little outline, and I just wrote down. You know, I was kind of doing a brain dump. And what I kind of came to was, you know, deliverance, it didn't fix me, but, or anyone I knew. It's like, but similar to like the name it, claim it, the problem, the failure of it always belonged to the patient, the person that, you know, well, it was your fault. Like, you know, you must have opened the door. And so I was thinking about it because I really grew up steeped in deliverance and the idea of the supernatural, that there is the demonic, there's the heavenly realm, and it's real, and you know, we can see it, and there's like manifestations, and that's, you can just go down the rabbit hole, but that's, you know, the cause for a lot of our ailments. But so what I've noticed too is in the, you know, I'm forming a hypothesis with the idea of the deliverance ministry, like who's attracted to that. And, you know, a lot of times it does bring in very broken. Well, you're very broken, desperate or whatever, but there's like this almost addictive quality to it. I think where I see people sort of transfer one addiction for another in that deliverance ministry. And it just spirals you into deeper and deeper weirdness, like truly, and attracts you start to attract other weird people, and then you guys just sort of feed off, like they feed off of each other. And that was, you know, my experience growing up. You know, I love my parents, that's, you know, but my mom had her own struggles and became a Christian when I was a baby, and she sort of dove headfirst into the most extreme possible charismatic things you could. If it was, you know, any type of Holy Spirit or whatever, she was there. And so just read books. And, you know, I said before the last podcast about all the revivals and, you know, different ministries that we jumped to, but my parents would collect other traumatized people who were, quote, anointed. And then it would just, they would feed off each other or learn like new special knowledge that, you know, they didn't know before. And so, you know, we can get into this more, but one thing I wanted to speak to in my experience was there were many opportunities, I think, you know, and my mother has told me this, where that, you know, she could have gone to therapy or whatever, but instead, you know, God saved her and, you know, brought these people in her life, and she learned about deliverance and breaking generational curses or whatever. And there was one lady in particular. We were living in New Jersey at the time, and my mom met her through a church. And I think I was in fifth grade. Gosh, so that was a long time ago, 93. Anyway, but my point is that this spiraled our family just deeper into the supernatural and deliverance. And so it was interesting because this woman that my mom became very close with, my parents became very close with, she was a World War II survivor. She grew up in Latvia. And so she had a lot of trauma in her past, like a lot of unresolved. Mm-hmm. And so there's a theme there that I'm seeing, people that have a lot of deep unresolved trauma that are then just, I don't know, go into this and, you know, maybe find the Lord through it, but then also find like another battle to fight. Like I'm God's warrior now battling this new fight or whatever. Their nervous system gets stuck in that. So that's kind of where I'm going. I'm happy to share like specific stories and then just kind of go into like that system itself.
Absolutely. So from my perspective, there are multiple angles that we have to look at this. And I don't really know that we can contain it in one single podcast. So I want to dive into what you're talking through and also want to go through a bit of the history and kind of tie all the pieces together. Because what we're talking about, when you hear it today and you hear the word deliverance ministry, you think of modern people and you think of you can put faces to deliverance ministry. And there are deliverance ministers, right? Mm-hmm. But what has really happened, and it's kind of happened behind the scenes where people are not aware that it has happened, is that we have actually created a subculture called the deliverance culture. It's not that we have a deliverance ministry, it's that we have a deliverance culture of people expecting a deliverance ministry, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
I did not know that until I was doing the research on John Dowie, and I wrote the book Weaponized Religion, A Critical Examination of John Alexander Dowie. I was going through his history because I was trying to see, was he truly one of God's generals, as they claim, or was he something else? And I found, lo and behold, this guy started his ministry by stealing a church.
And,
and that was the highlight of his life. And then it just went downhill from there. Well, when he came to America, running from all kinds of different weird things, he started posing as one of the early forms of a deliverance minister.
Mm-hmm.
But his gimmick was that he had this satchel filled with letters of people who had been healed in some other town or even in some other country. And he would hold a lecture, and he would pull up a letter, and he would read from it, "See, I healed this person." Then pull out another one, "See, I healed this other person." Well, he was attracting a crowd, and you could probably say that he was a deliverance minister because he was bringing this idea that he could deliver them from all of their afflictions, but there wasn't yet a deliverance culture to accept it. So when he landed on the West Coast, San Francisco, the newspapers were kind of excited because this was a new thing, and they weren't critical at all. They literally reported that he had healed all of these people in all of these other countries and cities and states. And so people read the newspaper, oh my gosh, this guy actually did this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, over time, when he continues to do the same thing, reading the letters from people who aren't present, this presents a problem because now the critical thinking is coming to play in the newspaper reports, and they start to say, wait a minute, we want to see some people here, not the people over there.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are a couple of stage healings and whatnot, but it was the early forms of what would become deliverance ministries. But eventually what happened is it started attracting all the people who really needed to be healed.
Mm-hmm.
And they couldn't be healed by the medical industry, medical profession of that era. They're medical science was just, compared to today, it was almost non-existent. So he offered them something that they could not get elsewhere, and it attracted people who were desperate.
Yeah.
My biggest problem with the whole idea of this is that you have people who are offering large groups of people in this deliverance culture an answer to every one of their problems.
Yeah.
But if you take batting averages, only like 3% actually get healed.
Yeah, no, I would say that was 100% my experience or in what I've seen. And I would say I'm not claiming to be an expert, but I'm pretty close, like, as far as considering what we, you know, because it wasn't just like, oh, we went up to Toronto. It was so-and-so is having random person who is, quote, quote, a healer, you know, and we're going to their basement for this, you know. So it's just, there's lots of memories of my sisters and I, like, falling asleep in random place, you know. It's just, yeah, like, we would go, like, you know, my parents were hungry, desperate, you know, so would go to these things to get, you know, what's the next key, or what is this person promising that will, you know, fix whatever is troubling us. And it's just a side note, it's interesting, I've heard a couple of people, I think you mentioned this too, talking about the stories and how, you know, it's a lot of stories that people tell. And the youth minister I interned for when I was 19, one thing I was captivated by were all his, like, fantastical stories, you know, just about, like, I pulled over the car and this guy was walking, he was homeless, and I just opened the door and I said, today is the day of salvation for you. And, you know, he got saved, whatever. And I thought it was so amazing. But then I worked for him, and then he's telling the same stories over and over again at different churches. And I'm thinking, like, you know, I'm naive, so I was like, he needs to tell some new stories, you know, like, but, you know, looking back, it's like, are they even true? I don't know. Like, no one, and we don't, I honestly, there's a part, I think people there don't want to verify it. And if you do ask even a little question, you know, you're jealous, you're bringing in a spirit of division, whatever. And so it's the same thing with deliverance. I don't know. It's sort of like, I felt by the time I went to IHOP KC in my early 20s that I was like a super Christian, that I was heavily equipped. I could speak in tongues. I was spirit filled. I knew I could bring anyone through deliverance or whatever it was. Like, I have the authority. And, you know, my parents to this day, they still carry anointing oil on their keys. So it's just like, whip it out. Like, at any point, you know, we're going to pray for deliverance. So it's whatever steps needed to take. And, you know, there's books and books and books on, like, well, this demon needs, you know, this much fasting, or, you know, did you break the generational curse back to eight generations of blah, blah, blah. So this particular woman that my, you know, parents became friends with, she, like, looked at me and was like, well, you know, Franny has very dark circles under her eyes. That's a sign of psychic heredity. I'm like, who, what is that? Something having to do with Freemasonry. I don't know. So it was very much like, okay, we need to pray to break the curse of psychic heredity in your family. So, and that was for the rest of my childhood prayed over. And it was always, you know, this lady told my parents this, and then my parents would use it. Your under eye circles are a barometer for what you've been into. So I remember being in sixth grade and coming home and I'm cornered. What are you into? Your dark circle, your circles under your eyes are dark today. You know, what did you do? And I'm like, you know, thinking, what did I do? And the only thing I could think of was like, well, we had a book fair at school. And this was like when the R.L. Stine Goosebumps books were popular. It's like, I looked at the book, like, I touched it, and like, and they're like, that's it. All right, we need to repent for, you know, touching the book, like, breaking whatever door you open to Satan. So that's one story of, like, many where it was like, this person has a special anointing and special discernment, and they can discern this on you, even though you don't see it. So, and you need this prayer, deliverance, whatever, in order to break it. And you always need to be, you know, watching your back at all costs, because at any moment you could be opening the door to the devil, which then will bring curses in your life. And this is why you have this. And that's kind of what it spiraled into. It was very much like, this sounds extreme, but it's true. Like, oh, you have acne? Okay, well, you know, you probably open the door to the devil. And then if it's like you've gone through that whole thing of like, well, okay, I didn't do that, then it would start to spiral into, well, there's a coven of witches that are concentrating on you. There's like this deep obsession I've noticed with, like, and you can see it kind of in politics, I will say. You know, my parents are very much believing that there is this cabal of witches that whatever, prey upon children, sacrifice, I don't. My point being is that there's always a deeper conspiracy. You know, I remember asking, I was like, why would there be a coven of witches concentrating on us? You know, it's like, because we're normal people. Like we're not in ministry or whatever. And it was just like, well, they hate the Jesus in you and you're anointed and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I don't want that then. You know, it's like, well, you don't have a choice. Like it is what it is. So that's kind of where it went. So it was like this one person. And so then my parents would just invite her and they would host groups in her house, you know, where people would receive prayer. But even in my own life, you know, with my own torments or whatever, deliverance ministry never, I didn't find healing, and I've never seen other people, that's not even biblical. Like, honestly, it's sort of like, it talks about like working out your faith or, you know, there's, and that's not life. Like there is like a level of like, if anyone's delivered, you know, from an addiction, yes, it's a miracle if someone can stop drinking and they start, but they still have to like go to whatever AA or do that work, and deliverance allows you to bypass that. And then if you're not delivered or healed, it's because you open the door again, or you're so anointed that you're just being cursed and this is your cross to bear or whatever. So
one of the interesting parts about being a musician is whenever you're on stage, you see the difference between what it's like being on stage and being in the audience. And there's this feeling that you get of being a performer, whether you're a good one or not. The other thing that musicians have in common with what we're talking about, and I do this too, you'll have like 10 or 15 songs that are your performing songs, and then you've got all these songs that you enjoy to play just because they're fun. Mm-hmm. But you will go, if you were to do a stage performance, you would always go to those 10. I started noticing as I was looking through the sermons at some of these deliverance healers, I began obviously with Branham, since that was the cult I was in. Some of the sermons were repetitive with different names. It would be the same exact sermon, maybe varying just slightly, but the subject matter was the same, and then it was repeated from town to town to town. And the thing of it is, people were coming to see this, and it was attracting all kinds of weird people. Mm-hmm. You had people who were desperately ill with, you know, incurable diseases who were coming, and sadly, many of them died. You also had people who had mental health issues who were coming. And they would come and be healed, and then they would go home, and they're still in their mental health condition. Well, they'd come and be healed again and again. Mm-hmm. And you'd see these people being healed again and again. And did they get healed? Well, they said they did. There's no way to prove it either way because of this positive confession thing. Mm-hmm. I have to confess that I'm healed, or otherwise I don't receive it. When you go home with a mental health issue, you might feel euphoria, and you might actually feel better. Mm-hmm. You might actually feel healed.
Yeah.
But that's the way it works. The problem is, when people continue to return, they're looking for an answer for their healing. And positive confession can only go so far, because mm-hmm. you can confess it until you're blue in the face. If you've got the condition and it's still ailing you, you're going to wonder, well, is there no change? And so the problem that exists, and this is one of the bigger problems that I have with the ministry, is they have this technique of getting your mind to focus on something that isn't your condition, mm-hmm. which serves two purposes. Number one, if you're focusing on the thing that isn't your condition, there are people who are sickly just because of the mental aspect of being sickly. Like they're hypochondria, for example. If you can focus their mind on something else, they actually start to improve. They feel better. Hey, I'm healed. There are people who have physical ailments that are life-threatening who don't get any better. There's this variety of people who are coming to these meetings, but for a percentage of the people, if you can get their mind to focus on something else, whether they're healed or not, they start to feel mm-hmm. better, and then positive confession becomes much easier. The other problem that exists is when you do this, now you're transferring everything onto the shoulders of the person who's coming. Did you positively confess? If not, what else is wrong? You have to mm-hmm. give that distraction, right? I have this book, which I'll probably bring it out in one of our podcasts. I've showed it in a couple of the others, but I have a textbook on how to train a deliverance minister. Yes. And it has things, I guess you've seen it. It has things like how to cure the demon of hiccups. And it's so weird when you think about it, because in one sense, that sounds crazy, the demon of hiccups, but in the framing that they give you of what, how these demons operate, if you don't have a demon labeled to the hiccups, well, you've got a missing gap, right? Because if everything negative that happens to your body comes from a demon, well, hiccups is negative. You suffer slightly with it, right? So they have to give a label of a demon to everything. Well, some things just simply aren't a demon. And what do you do with this? Now you've got the people who should critically think, but they're not allowed to. And you have the minister who's telling them that, don't think that way, brother, sister, because the worst thing will come on you.
Yeah, that's true. It does. It keeps you trapped. I like how you said that. You don't actually find healing. It's just this, it's a cycle, like you're saying, a euphoria. It's kind of, if you're struggling with mental illness, whether it's anxiety, depression, I've seen this, you know, with people in my own life. You know, so-and-so is depressed, very heavily depressed today, someone in my family. You just need to pray for her because, you know, there's a coven of witches concentrating on her. Looking back, I'm like, Ori, you were depressed. Like, and probably, you know, I see it with my own. Like, so, you know, my mother suffered with, you know, her own trauma and her upbringing. And so after I've been in therapy for many years and just sort of looking at that and seeing like, well, she probably needed like just to work through that. It wasn't a demonic attack or a witch concentrating on her. Like, you were just depressed. Like, so try to move through that emotion or addressing, you know, like that's part of being human. Like, our traumas, our issues. It's the same thing with this woman that my parents were close with. You know, I look back on the influence she had in our family. And I'm like, well, she was traumatized. Like, she grew up in Latvia in World War II, and they're starving, hungry. I think, you know, they're worried for their lives. They came over here and, you know, she had crazy marriages and a lot of brokenness in her family. And it's like, but she was stuck. Like, she, in my opinion, I don't think you aren't healed. It's, you know, people have been like, well, you know, God healed me from my eating disorder. And it's like, well, okay, you might not be, like, you're still eating, or you might not be actively like bulimic or whatever it is, but mentally you are still stuck in that. You've just transferred your addiction to deliverance or whatever it is. It's either deliverance or the euphoria of going to these meetings where they play worship music over and over again. You whip yourself up, the person speaks, they offer you hope. You go through the deliverance, and at this point, you know, people are so whipped up, you might manifest, you know, whatever it is. And then you leave with your high, like you said. And then a couple of days later, inevitably, you will dip. And so it's like, the devil's attacking me. It's that same cycle. And so personally for myself, growing up in that, you know, my parents used to always say like, oh, you're so blessed that you are raised a Christian. And I just remember thinking, like, feeling really guilty, because I'm like, well, I'm having my own struggles, you know, like I struggle with my own panic and anxiety or whatever, and, you know, eating disorder. But I felt a lot of deep shame, because it's like, well, you know, I know how to pray in tongues. I'm spirit filled. I've been to 5,000 deliverance minutes. I know how to do that. I know how to like cast out demons. But I'm still struggling. And, you know, I would go to various pastors and ask for prayer or for help. And they would get very annoyed with me, because they're like, well, you're just not walking it out. I've told you this already. And so then, of course, I would just sort of internalize more, because it's like, well, I think the critical thinking part in me was like, there's a part that's like, this isn't working. Like, it's not. And there's the part where I was trained from the birth to shut it off. It's like, no, that's, you know, questioning God. That's, you know, whatever. It's something with you. So I think, and there's a lot that we could go into, but there is a little bit of my own training of like, turning off your critical thinking, but also like, well, the problem is yours. Like, it's your fault. And I've had to work through this a lot, because I see even in just my work life or in family where I just automatically assume it's my fault, that have sort of, you know, that those are patterns I'm trying to, you know, break in my own life. But I do want to say that the answer a lot of times is always like, they tell you is go to this camp meeting or this deliverance ministry or read this book. And a lot of those books are very terrifying. There's one that we can talk about later, but this lady named Rebecca Brown, she wrote a book called Becoming a Vessel of Honor. He Came to Set the Captives Free. We had those books, and I remember reading them and having nightmares. I mean, it was terrifying. And actually, that woman, she used to be a doctor. She had her license revoked, and now she's like, I think she's schizophrenic or whatever. I don't know. But to me, I'm like, that's the fruit of this concentration. But the thing I'll end on, which it's a positive thing. When my husband and I got married, we moved to D.C. We were living on Capitol Hill, and we were looking for, you know, a church. And I was really struggling. I was burnt out. Like, I grew up in this, you know, this like fight or flight, you know, demon around every corner, like whatever, IHOP KC, all these ministries, and just, you know, feeling like a failure because I wasn't in full-time ministry. And, you know, and honestly, by God's grace, I married a man who is stable. I mean, he's not perfect, but like he's stable. It's like, I think that's why I was attracted to him, because he's very like, I don't know what you're talking about, you know, and he's Christian. But anyways, after we got married, I would cry all the time. It was like anxiety. I would just cry and cry and cry and cry and cry, cry. And he was like, I don't know what to do, you know? And I was just like, oh, I must have like made a wrong choice, or there's just, you know, what am I being cursed with? And so we ended up at an Anglican church, or I think it was non-denom, but the pastors have an Anglican background, and they definitely like were open to charismatic stuff. And so they offered healing prayer, and desperate, I went, and I met with the pastor's wife, and I'll be forever indebted to her, because she spent 2 hours with me, and I was crying, and she was praying for me, and this is what I wish a lot of churches would do, because she said at the end, she was so gentle, but she was like, have you ever been to therapy? I was like, no, you know, and because I've been taught like, you know, therapists are evil. They're going to get in your mind. They plant things and they're not of God. And I was like, no. I was like, well, I mean, maybe a Christian counselor. And she's like, no, not a Christian counselor. She's like an actual psychotherapist. And I was like, no. And she was like, I think you need to see a trained psychotherapist. And she's like, in fact, we've worked with this particular person. She was like, I will give you her information, and then I will call her to let her know that we're sending you. And I mean, I appreciate her saying that. Like, and I had to really take a step of faith, because I was terrified to see a therapist. But that changed the trajectory of my healing in my life, because it was that, like, I don't know, that learning, unlearning, working through, like, this is called trauma. You know, this isn't a sin, and this is not a demon. You know, it's in that. And so I can see where if you have addiction or whatever it is, and you are addicted to that euphoric high, therapy is a letdown, because it's really facing your inclinations to want to be on that wheel of like emotional high, emotional low, emotional high, and sort of step out of that. And that can feel scary and hard. And so I can see where, you know, people want to stay in that.
Have you ever wondered how the Pentecostal movement started, or how the progression of modern Pentecostalism transitioned through the latter rain, charismatic, and other fringe movements into the new apostolic reformation? You can learn this and more on William Branham Historical Research's website, william-branham.org. On the books page of the website, you can find the compiled research of John Collins, Charles Paisley, Stephen Montgomery, John McKinnon, and others, with links to the paper, audio, and digital versions of each book. You can also find resources and documentation on various people and topics related to those movements. If you want to contribute to the cause, you can support the podcast by clicking the contribute button at the top. And as always, be sure to like and subscribe to the audio or video version that you're listening to or watching. On behalf of William Branham Historical Research, we want to thank you for your support. There's so much to talk through. I know that this is probably the first time that I've addressed this particular subject. I've wanted to. But there is a problem that exists within Deliverance Ministries that is similar to a situation where you have a salesman who is generating his own sales, if that makes any sense. I watched this television show recently, and this couple were trying to sell candles at this event and not selling any, and they had to sell, like, I don't know, 5,000 of them. And the guy sneaks off and he cuts the power to the place where now everybody has to buy a candle. So he generated his own sales. Mm-hmm. Well, Deliverance Ministries do this, and not many people think through that. What you're describing is something that I have thought really hard about, because I have multiple family members who deal with trauma. And to a person who deals with trauma, they're more susceptible to other traumas. Mm-hmm. So when you get a person who's in that state and they go to one of these deliverance sessions, whatever you want to call it, these deliverance seminars, and they're being told that they have a demon, from a religious standpoint, you think, okay, this is a demon, this is hurting the person, and they're being affected. But by telling them that they have the demon, if it causes the trauma, now you're creating a problem that you can then solve.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually happens in these groups, right? Deliverance meetings, especially the ones that get on the platform with them, it can intensify their shame because they feel broken. They feel dirty. How did I get a demon in me? What did mm-hmm. I do? Like you said, I have a coven of witches somewhere that's trying to attack me. Why are they doing this in this day and age, right? Mm-hmm. Well, if you can get the people to believe that you have something that is the answer to their problem, and if they don't even have a problem, create one that you can also answer, like mm-hmm. the demon of hiccups. Well, you're generating your own sales, and there is a money that flows beyond this. But for me, the money is not so much the issue as it is the trauma. Whenever you are traumatizing people, whether knowingly or unknowingly, the trauma itself can look spiritual. I have mm-hmm. seen people suffering trauma, and you can have shaking. Is that spiritual shaking? Are they shaking in the spirit? You can have disassociation. You can have many, mm-hmm. many different things. You can have dreams and nightmares. Was the nightmare dream? Is that a spiritual dream, right? The trauma actually puts you into a mental state where you are suffering so intensely that the things happening physically with your body would not otherwise happen if not for the trauma. And at the same time, you're in intense pain mentally. Mm-hmm. And so you're seeking, it's this vicious cycle. You're seeking healing for your trauma, and you're getting more trauma back. So when you're in that state, that's where the people really spiral out of control. And a person mm-hmm. with religious trauma can actually become destabilized whenever they're in this type of environment. And at the same time, they're telling you don't go to therapy because that's how the demons enter into you.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, we have all the candles. Come get our candles. Don't go get mm-hmm. the other guy's candles, right? And we're going to cut the lights so that you have to get our candles. For me, it's just so wrong. Mm-hmm. Now, I know people will hear me say that and they'll think John's against praying for the sick. Mm-hmm. I'm separating the two. There is a difference between the two, and it comes in the word cast. Those who cast out demons are doing an action. Those are the ones who are like the sorcerers. Those are the people who you go to, and you have to go to them so that they can do it for you. Or if you're the average person, you can pray for yourself. Why would you even need to go to a healer? But mm-hmm. they train you to believe that you must go to a deliverance minister for certain types of demons, because then they have the monopoly on that type of demon.
Yeah, no, that is very true, because it's like, gosh, I've tried and tried and tried to pray deliverance for myself, and I'm not getting it. And so it does lead you to these various ministers or ministries. And that was what our experience was growing up. You know, I think that there's some deep pain and healing that both of my parents needed. And for them, the answer was, well, we just need to go deeper for Christ. So it was hopping around to, it's almost like this underground grapevine of, like, this person's showing up at this church basement, you know, come for this. And so it was just like broken people that we encountered. And some of it's just like not safe, you know. And it's sad because it's, you know, I see the torment that, you know, people get stuck in. And I think for me, it's like, well, my gosh, I grew up in this and I've seen this. I don't know anything different. And it's not working. Like, I'm seeing people who, you know, are gay and who have tried very hard, whatever. And, you know, and I would have said my answer, you know, in high school, growing up, college, whatever, even up to IFKC, is like, oh, you just need the devil cast out of you, or that spirit cast from you. And it's like these people who feel that there's something deeply wrong with them. And so, like you're saying, so much shame. And they're like, I'm doing everything I need to do. And it's still not working. What's wrong with me? And so it just, and it will spiral you into that until whether you can break out of it and find another way. But the deliverance and that deep charismania, they don't offer another way. It's like, you're either special and, you know, you can be like our poster child of like, this is the person got healed or delivered, or set free immediately from addiction. Or it's like, you're not walking it out, or you might be walking it out and be perfect, but now you're so anointed that you've got witches concentrating on you because they hate you. And so I think that's kind of what growing up, it was like, well, I haven't done anything. And it's like, well, you know, we saw a black cat the other day, and a lot of times, you know, witches will transform into black cats and they spy on you. And I'm like, spy on us for what? You know? And it's like, I think as a kid, like you, I would ask these things. I'm like, why? You know? And it's just, there was never an answer. And it was sort of like a shameful thing to even ask. And I do remember we used to have to, my parents would have these like packets of like deliverance packets. And so it was like, all right, time to go through the deliverance packet again. And it was like, okay, repeat after me, you know, repent of God, you know, I repent of the sin of Ekinkar. And I remember, I was like, what is that? And my mom's like, I don't know, just say it. You know, I was like, I don't even know what that is to this day, but it was, I just remember. And we would go through the packets and I'm like, Mom, why do we have to do this again? And she was like, well, we need, it's good to like cleanse yourself over and over. And I'm just thinking, but the Bible says Jesus became the curse, you know, once and for all. Like there's, so I see parts of me where it was like, this doesn't make sense. But because I was raised and you're steeped in it, you are just, it's like not okay. Or I just assume I'm wrong. You know, I was like, well, this person's more anointed. They're more mature. Like, they probably know better, so I'm just, I guess I'm wrong. So yeah, a lot of that does. And so then it does prime you to either stay in these things or, you know, after IHOPKC, I was low and it just was like trying to figure out my place. And I ended up joining Amway. So, I mean, it's like, but in that Amway was, I remember my parents being like, why are you doing, Amway is a cult, you know? And I'm thinking, they're saying the same things that you all say, you know? And I just, it was so hard for me because I'm like, it's the same thing, you know? Like they have this, like, if you've ever, I don't know, like, if, you know, people have been to these things, if you go to their big conventions, they do like prayer. They're very much in the word of faith, like Kenneth Copeland, like that whole thing. And so like, you know, they'll say, at least the people I was involved with were like, actually, you know, it's not about making money. It's about saving souls. So, and I was only in it for a few months. And I remember it was a good friend of mine from high school that got me in it. And I got into it because I was like, I don't want to do Amway. But she was like, oh, well, we're all Christians. We have a Bible study. Just come to a Bible study. And so I got sucked in that way. And I remember it, I was like, I can't do this anymore. And I told her, I was like, this is a cult. And it was like, you know, you're, how dare you say it's a cult and blah, 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 you know, whatever. But I see that, like I was primed to go from like extreme, 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 extreme. And honestly, I think it was, you know, the friends that I met in college, you know, I'm grateful for that experience. I went to a secular university, liberal arts college, lived with girls that were Christians, women, and they were really good friends. And that was like a stabilizing force in my life where it was like, you know, are you sure about that? And then meeting my husband, who was just a good Presbyterian boy, you know, and was there was something where I was attracted to that stability. And I think that's why therapy worked for me too. And I have to be careful. I don't want to jump into like, you know, because you can get crazy with therapy too. It's like, well, this modality is the best. And it's like, each person is different, like what works for you. But I think what I'm attracted to and what I find safe is steadiness, stability, and like, yes, you know, I'm still a Christian. I still believe in God. And yes, there are things that you can't explain. You know, God is big. But like, there is a level of like stability. And I would say even Jesus in the Bibles, to me, that's what I've always go back to. It's like, he was always really calm. You know, he wasn't like screaming at people or making them feel like garbage, or he wasn't rocked by, you know, like, well, did you open the door to the devil? You know, it was just, so yeah, I think I kind of, in to me, I do feel like it was God's mercy. I mean, someone might disagree or whatever, but I see that in God's kindness of like, you know, here. And I think God does that for all of us. It's whether if you want to do the hard work of like, you know, like stepping out of that cycle of like craziness. But it really is those deliverance charismatic ministries. It's very, to me, it's very reckless, and it's very predatory. And it keeps people trapped and makes them, in my opinion, you get worse. And that's from my experience, what I've seen. People just get worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. And they don't get better. The last thing I want to say was interesting. So growing up, we used to always go to this weird place called the Calvary Pentecostal Campground. I was like Googling, trying to figure out if there was any connection with William Branham, but it was started by like the Heflin family. And then Ruth Heflin was one of the, anyway. So we would go to that, and that was just the weirdest. I mean, just, it was the droning of like the drums and the music and the, you know, people. And it would just be, I could probably get, you know, paid to go speak there, because it's like, oh, I have a deliverance ministry. But that's usually like where Morningstar people or whatever we'd see. And it's funny to me because my youngest sister is an occupational therapist at a hospital that's kind of near there. And she'll tell me, she works in acute care, and she was like, we get the weirdest people that come in from Calvary. And she's like, and so my coworkers are always like, that place needs to be shut down. It attracts the, like, just addicts and all kinds of stuff. And my sister's like, I just keep my mouth shut because I don't want them to know that I've been there multiple times growing up, and you know, and I know exactly what they're talking about. And I was just like, oh. So anyway, I digress.
I'll be getting into this history with actually a couple other co-hosts, but the deliverance ministries that exist today, William Branham and Gordon Lindsay were starting to hold these deliverance seminars to help train people in mm-hmm. how to do this thing that Branham was doing. And I'm heading towards your stability with your husband comment, because another thing many people don't think through is the fact that healers are human too. So the deliverance minister is human, mm-hmm. and the human may also have mental health issues. So is he stable? Is he not? William Branham openly admitted that he suffered from severe, what did he call it? He was a severe neurotic. And yet he's holding these deliverance schools, teaching other people how to be this. And there's this fine line, there's this question, well, what part of it was the neurotic condition and what part was God? You have to separate this, right? Mm-hmm. If the person openly admits it, that's a question you can't ignore. But whenever a person's in psychosis, they can have all kinds of things, from visions to experiences. The problem is, when you're entering into the group think mindset and the person mm-hmm. who is the central figure has some sort of a mental health condition, well, everybody starts to think, well, that's how spiritual people act. And they start mm-hmm. acting like this. Yeah. When outside people see them, they're like, oh my gosh, is that person crazy? Yes. And they may not actually be. They're just taking on the cult identity of the person who is crazy. I was one of these crazy people.
Right.
I can tell you. You know, and I'll be honest, even today, people laugh sometimes at the comments that I make, but some of the comments I make are actually programmed responses because it was that level of crazy in the movement. And yes, it is funny, and yes, you can laugh at me, but that's mm-hmm. the way it is. They have this grandiose personality, that all of the attributes that you would see in a person with mental health issues, you find them in the deliverance ministries. Here's the problem. The person who is training people, along with Gordon Lindsay, to do this, it openly admits he's got a neurological problem. Well, everybody else sees that in the training. Oh, well, that's how you must act to be a healer. Mm-hmm. And so you've got this wide variety of people who are acting crazy, and they're thinking that's spiritual to act that way. Mm-hmm. But worse, if you question why they're acting crazy, you've got a demon and they've got to cast it out, right? So again, you enter into this vicious cycle. Well, in the end, the problem is that the person who's on stage should have probably been examined by mm-hmm. professional mental health professionals, right? And taken out of that scene because they're causing their own trauma. Mm-hmm. And Branham caused his own trauma. He actually mentioned being suicidal a few times. He was in that state of trauma from his state of neurosis or whatever was the condition. We don't know exactly what he was diagnosed with. He was suffering too. So the problem now becomes the healer is suffering. He's causing other people to suffer more on top of the conditions that they previously had. Mm-hmm. And so you've got this compound problem. And you need a true deliverance that you're not going to find in this ministry.
mm-hmm. I would say that is 100% accurate in my experience. And it's interesting, as a child, like when you grow up in that, that's all you know. And you're dependent on these adults. And so it really is, it is kind of a miracle. If you're able to, it's like you're in this cycle and you're able to step out and do something different or think differently or whatever. But I do think that it is reckless to have children involved in that, or to see that, or to know, or whatever, or to feel somehow responsible. Because some of these, like, you know, I have KC, their kids ministry, they had that, you know, of just indoctrinating kids into that, you know, well, you can have miracles too. Here, come pray for this, like, person for healing or deliverance or whatever. And it's just like that, so much pressure to put on. And I think growing up in it, you're idealistic, you know, I just assume that these people are proclaiming Jesus and they're Christians, so of course they're honest, like of course they're telling the truth, like they know better than I do. And why would someone who loves God and, you know, proclaims scripture be lying to me, or, you know, grifting? You know, it's like you don't think along those lines. And so it really is hard to start to think in those terms of, like, this is a person, and what were they qualified to do this? You know, we went to a lot of Todd Bentley meetings. This was like before his first fall. And, you know, that was unfair to him. It's like he kind of came in and addict, whatever, who knows what his, I don't even know his story, but I think that grifting folks saw someone that they could like platform and that was charismatic and, oh, he's anointed and was attracting a crowd. And so you put this broken person who should not be leading at all, you know, and proclaiming Christ or whatever, on this platform. And then of course he falls apart, which is inevitable because no person can, you know, especially if you're not equipped, can maintain that. And then it's like, well, he needs deliverance. And it's like an endless, but what happens is like the loop never gets closed. Like it's sort of like, well, Todd Bentley, you know, he had this revival and da 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 da. And then he was like, whatever, stalking people. I don't even know, like whatever his improprieties were and illegal stuff. But then people move on to the next thing. It's never addressed. Like, it's like, oh, well, he's, you know, getting restored or whatever. And it's like, it's interesting to me that what has been frustrating is I'm like, you're not learning your lesson. Like, and I'm not saying that in a judgmental way. It's just that I've noticed, it's like, well, let's move on to the next person, or this person's anointed or whatever. And I think you just have to look at it's like, it's, these people want to maintain their power. They want to maintain their job, their grift, their money, whatever it is. And so, like, it's sort of like, well, don't look over there. We're going to move on to this next sensational thing. And it, and if you do try to critically think, you are a Jezebel or influenced by the devil or, you know, bringing in attacks. I mean, there was a lot of that too. I think growing up, I was always so worried that my bad attitude or whatever was opening the door to attack my parents, you know. So maybe my dad lost this sale for, you know, the company he was working for because I was listening to rock and roll music. It allowed the devil to come in and attack them. And so it just, it makes, it does, like you were saying, with this paranoia, the deliverance, supernatural stuff, really, it makes you paranoid. Like you start to think, I mean, you know, when there's, okay, when there was like crows landing in our yard growing up, and to this day, you know, my mom will be like, oh, the blood of Jesus, you know, get them out of here. And it's like, you know, they're signs of the devil, you know, whether it's spying on you or what. And that was, you know, learned through a lot of these like deliverance ministries and these people who talk about how, you know, in these books or whatever, like, you know, witches transform into crows or cats and they spy on you. So it's like, if you're not actively sinning or opening the door to the devil knowingly, well, there he's coming after you. And so it's like, you always have to be on guard. You always have to be vigilant. And I think too, in this deliverance ministry, there's a lot of addiction to like, and it's like, just go see a horror film. It's like, people like to be scared. I really believe that. It's like, you get that adrenaline rush of like, ooh, this is like the scary story. Like, let's tell ghost stories, basically what it is. And you get your high from that. But it's like, well, you could just go see a horror film. And I'm not advocating for that. Like, I mean, it's interesting. My sisters and I, to this day, it's like, we can listen to a true crime podcast or whatever, but you talk about anything supernatural or like horror, I mean, we can't even watch Stranger Things. Like, it's like, no, you know, because we're just, it's so, it's just terrifying. Like, we've all three of us have had trouble sleeping, you know, because of what happens in the night, you know. And I do remember being a kid and we'd be told these stories like, well, Smith Wigglesworth was praying and then he turned around and Satan manifested and he just said, oh, it's you, and went back to praying. And isn't that amazing? And I'm like, I hope that never happens to me. Like, I remember saying, I was like, I don't want to see anything. And it was like, well, why not? Don't, you know, the power of God's so much greater in you. Who?
Well, and the funny part is you are describing what I was going to end with, because what you're describing is the trauma that exists after you have been in this type of movement. I'm traumatized too. I cannot watch a horror movie. And I'll openly admit it. I can watch cartoons crazily all day long if I want to the point people will walk out of the room and say, John, I'm tired of cartoons. I can't watch a horror film. And that's because of this. My mind is still traumatized. And there are triggers that set off and it's painful. Mm-hmm. What I was going to end with is this. The problem that exists for me, the biggest problem of all of this, goes back to the trauma. Does the ministry that you're dealing with, I don't care if it's one of the so-called good guys in the deliverance ministry or the ones who are considered by even charismatics as being a little nutty, do they have a process for handling actual trauma? Because trauma is not a demon. Trauma is something that you can, as a human, you can set off in another human. You, as a deliverance minister, can set this off to the people in your audience, and I think some of them know this. So what is your strategy for trauma, and who benefits whenever somebody becomes traumatized? If the person in the audience is getting traumatized and the person on stage benefits, well, you're a salesman you're creating your own sales, right? What safeguards do you have to prevent trauma in the ministry? I can't think of any safeguards in the ministry I came from, and yet we were told that we could be delivered and healed from all of these things, and yet they were generating the very trauma that caused countless people to go to therapists after escaping. This is a huge problem, and it's a problem that's not easily solved, because they have created the deception that if you have trauma, if you're suffering with trauma, you have a demon. And people are getting wounded in these types of ministries, and for me, that is a problem, because you are part of the problem that needs to be corrected if you are creating trauma and you're making the people more sick by listening to you. Mm-hmm. I'm a speaker, limited. I do this little podcast, which is nothing. If I were to think that somebody in my listening crowd were to become traumatized because of something I said, I couldn't sleep at night. I couldn't eat. Mm-hmm. I would be suffering. I would be traumatized because I traumatized mm-hmm. another person. I know I can put faces to the people that I'm saying this about in my head. I know people that really wouldn't care as long as that person would contribute money to them as they do it. Mm-hmm. And for me, that's the biggest problem.
I would agree with that. It's a lot of untrained people who are uninformed and uneducated on really serious matters, recklessly going in and saying that they have the answer or whatnot, and using God. Like, I think that's what really is so twisted as well, is you're using a person's deeply held religious beliefs, like, and God, to like sell your product or prop up your own platform. And you know, and I think a lot of times with these deliverance people, it's like, I have the answer. You know, well, that's the answer. You know, this is what it is. The world doesn't know, but I do. You're schizophrenic? Well, you need to be delivered. And it's like, I mean, I've seen that. People stop taking their medicine, and it just, you get worse. And it's like, well, don't trust doctors. Don't trust medicine. You can only trust the person here who's saying that they're a believer and that they're qualified for this deliverance ministry. And it's like, you know, how so? It doesn't, but yeah, like it keeps you trapped and really stuck and worse. Like, honestly, I would say that's been my experience, is it makes you worse, more afraid, more anxious, less trusting of yourself, and still on that addiction wheel of like the next speaker, the next new thing, the next, you know, whatever, instead of like, you know, I don't have to go on for this forever, but I participated in this one form of therapy. It's so basic. It's called DBT, Dialectic Behavior Therapy. It sounds more complex than it actually is. It was like group therapy. And it's basically like, I mean, I do it with my kids. It's like learning your emotions. Like, here's the emotion wheel, you know, and then like, when you are emotionally distressed, here are, halt, are you hungry, angry, lonely, tired? Like those things, you know, like how to help yourself move through a distressing emotion and learning like about your emotions, whatever. And you do it in a group therapy session. It's because you kind of talk, like people sort of share and you do your homework that week. But I'm like, well, that's what, like, and not everyone, I'm saying, with, but there is a level of like, well, that's like what, It's not fun. It's not like exciting. I don't get an emotional high from, you know, being like, all right, hold on. Deep breath. All right, am I hungry? You know, like that type of thing. But that's, you know, and I think that's what a lot of people are resistant. What I have seen, you want that emotional high and that hit, and that's not the answer. But these sensational, you know, they keep you stuck in it. And so you see people like Bob Jones. I mean, we've like went to his stuff. Like, we used to drive to Morningstar a lot, and there's some weird people there too. And people like Bob Jones, who clearly has a mental illness but is deified, and, you know, you get put on this pedestal. And so then they start to believe their own like importance and delusions, and like, oh, that's a manifestation of the Holy Spirit right there. And it's like, where, you know, but you know, you don't want to say you didn't see it, because it's like, well, then I guess I'm not seeing God or whatever. But I'm rambling and going on another rabbit trail. But yeah, just to what you were saying, that they're, it's a cycle. It's, you know, people start to make money off of it. You know, Rick Joyner and his whole crew, like yeah, he sells all those books, like The Quest or whatever, you know, and of it being real. Or people have these crusades, and that's how they keep their money, their power, control, whatever it is. And I do think it's kind of the worst form, because they use scripture, they use God, they use Christianity to manipulate people and to also, you know, line their pockets. I'm sorry to say it like that, but it's the truth. Whatever the grift, even if you didn't start off as a grifter, It's like eventually you have to come to grips with, like, is what I'm doing helping or hurting? What is the fruit? And a lot of these people, they keep themselves in these echo chambers, especially the higher up they get, you know, like, and you talk about this a lot in your podcast, where it's like, well, you know, I have dirt on you, or I'll pat your back, you pat mine. And this is working for us now, but the minute, like, stuff really comes out about, like, a Sean Bowles or whoever, you know, look, we don't know, you know, it's like, he's not affiliated with us, and, you know, whatever, because it's like, well, we're going to drop you, because, you know, no longer helps our bottom line for us to be aligned. And so that's a kind of, you know, it's the same thing with the deliverance ministry. I honestly don't see any value in it at all. That's my opinion, but yeah.
You and I share that opinion. So thank you so much for doing this.
Yeah, this is great. Thanks for having me. Enjoyed it.
Well, if you've enjoyed our show and you want more information, you can check us out on the web. You can find us at william-branham.org. For more about the dark side of the New Apostolic Reformation, you can read Weaponized Religion, From Christian Identity to the NAR, available on Amazon, Kindle, and Audible.